evening, everyone.
Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Penny, and this is Blog Talk Radio, live radio. I am Lauren Tenney, and this is Talk with Tenney. I want to thank you for tuning in tonight and for listening and invite you to be part of the program. The number to call if you'd like to talk is area code 267-521-0167. Area code 267-521-0167. The toll-free line, if you'd like to call in, is area code 855-346-3351. 855-346-3351. I know that we are going to be talking about a lot of things tonight, particularly on alternative to alternatives and going back to perhaps the way it was in the days of old with the International Conference on Human Rights and Psychiatric Oppression, which I have heard about but obviously never participated in because this was going on prior to when I was first locked up in 1985. First locked up in 1988, the Alternatives Conference established in 1985, some people who had been involved with the International Conference on Human Rights and Psychiatric Oppression say that that was at the time when the federal government bought the civil rights and mental patients liberation movement, the ex-patients movement, which soon after became more identified as the psychiatric survivor movement. And is called many things by many people, but is definitely at threat and definitely not what's happening at the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration-funded Alternatives Conference. I'm not quite sure what alternatives are offered at the Alternatives Conference. There are a lot of people, I want to say out flat, that are involved with the Alternatives Conference and some of the programs that I'm talking about that I respect deeply, some who I consider friends. And so sometimes talking about these things is very difficult for me because sometimes the people involved with these, if not directly, indirectly, are people that I really like and respect and know. So that being said, there is a huge problem of what's going on with alternatives and has been for decades. One of the things that was, talked about in the devoiced research by at least two of the people that participated was what it was like, prior to that landmark in time. It really is the establishment of the Alternatives Conference really is a marker in history and in the history of civil rights for people who are psychiatrically labeled, and things have changed, and over the years things have continued to change, and I'd put money on the fact that things will still change. The only problem is that as much as it changes and as many times as any of these systems that are set up to deal with, I don't even know what anymore, because it seems to be dealing with all kinds of things that aren't necessarily really dealt with by psychiatry, is really doing damage and just supporting a mainstream call for biomedical research of the brain. And I think that's a real problem because I think it moves away from the issues of what it is people very often who have wound up in the psychiatric system face, which is having already survived some kind of extreme abuse or trauma or, or other kinds of oppressions, and real abuse, physical, sexual, psychological, emotional, you know, abuse and torture prior to even getting to the psychiatric system, or extreme loss, or issues, or poverty, or having a political belief different than the people that are most often around. Area code 330, your line is open.
Hi, Lauren, it's Sharon.
Hey, Sharon, how are you?
I'm doing okay tonight. How are you?
I'm good. So I understand we're going to be talking about alternatives to alternatives, huh?
Yeah, that's one of the things I want to talk about tonight. I think there are a few different things we can talk about, you know, with regard to where we go next as the movement, and I'm interested in getting into any of those that any of the other callers are interested in talking about. But I was listening to your show last night, and I've had a little bit of, like, limited internet and social media access, and it was my first time hearing the news that Patrick Kennedy would be the keynote speaker at Alternatives. And
yeah, the opening keynote speaker.
The opening keynote speaker, yes. And I have to tell you, that was just news I was not even prepared to hear when it came out on your show last night. And so I have just been thinking a little bit about our movement, and I think there are three different things, just my ideas, of course, that, you know, going forward we need to be cognizant of. And, of course, the first thing is the Alternatives to Alternatives conference, which has, you know, been discussed among you and I and a few other people, you know, during the Bastille Day event and post-Bastille Day. I also think it's really important. One thing we hardly ever talk about in our movement is controlling the media, obviously probably because we don't have any control of the media at
you
this
know.
Point.
And it's nerve-wracking. Yeah. I was interviewed by somebody in the media today. I don't know if it'll ever hit the light of day, but
yeah.
But yeah, it's scary. It's scary because they have an agenda, and it's really hard to, even if they're open to hearing, I mean, my experience anyway, even if they're open to hearing what you're trying to talk about, they still have a line that they're trying to fit in the pieces to. And so, yeah, it's really, really scary. And the idea that you don't get to see what they're doing before it comes out is even scarier.
I just had a message from one of the people that I'm in contact with in the Cleveland area, and she was telling me about a story that came out on Fox 8 News in Cleveland, which is one of our local news stations, and it was about a woman who was receiving ECT as a treatment, and she was speaking out about the you know, the issues and the problems with ECT that she had, and apparently the news story just got, you know, completely skewed and completely tried to make her look like she didn't know what she was talking about and wasn't, you know, competent to remark on any type of psychiatric, quote-unquote, treatment. And so I'm still trying to see that clip, but that was, you know, that's one of the things that's happened recently, and I think it's just one example from, you know, one area of the country, and I think there are a lot of them out there. But the third thing also that I think is important to our movement is our stories, and I think that we need to continue to advance our stories. Eventually, I think we have seen with other human rights movements, I think we have seen that eventually their literature, a piece of their literature, certain pieces of their literature will break through into the mainstream consciousness in terms of, you know, what people are reading widely. And I'm not just talking about the psychiatric community or the community of the movement, however you would like to phrase that. I almost said anti-psychiatry, but I don't think that I want to limit it that much for purposes of this discussion. So those are three things that I'm really interested in, you know, discussing with anyone who has ideas on those topics.
So important, you know, and I think that also, I think that, you know, one of the things that this reporter was interested in talking to me about was my story, and I was so nervous about this getting twisted out into so many different ways, and when she asked me at the end, was there anything that she didn't ask that she should have asked, I said, I'd like to, or anything else I wanted to talk about, and I said, well, I'd kind of like some kind of statement in there that says, you know, all of this about me, whatever, but this isn't about me, that this can be anybody, and that this is about this group of people who are oppressed, and that anybody can be assigned into at any moment based on just about anybody's say-so. And, you know, and I don't know if she heard that or not. But part of what she was looking for, which I was impressed by, was a balance in the story that she was writing, because all she was getting was pro-Murphy Bill kind of stuff. So I'm interested in how, but it's scary, A, to put yourself out there, and B, to, you know, do so without being able to control it, which is what you said earlier. Like, how do we control the media to make it not look like, you know, I'm some kind of raving lunatic that should be disregarded. And
yeah, and I know that there are people out there who are doing that. Our friend Yvonne, and I believe she's in D.C., just asked me to blog on her site today, and I felt like that was very kind of Yvonne to do that. So,
awesome.
You know, I know that I know that there are blogs out there. There are people who are writing their stories. Occasionally in MIA, we see people's personal stories. But I just think it's so important that we, you know, that we support that kind of literature and that we get it out there. And I do firmly believe that eventually, you know, some of our literature will break through into the, you know, mainstream market for different kinds of writing.
Right, and certainly in terms of, like, people writing autobiographies all the way back to the, you know, I think probably if you look at Gail Hornstein's list, probably at least to the 1600s, but certainly back to the 1800s, there were continuously and have continuously been these people's personal stories getting into the mainstream market in books or movies more recently, and really altering the way. So, yeah, I mean, I think that that's something really important. And I just like to invite people, if you'd like to call in and join in the conversation, the number to call is area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free line, you can call area code 855-346-3351. That's 855-346-3351. Yeah, so I think that, you know, we have a whole bunch of information about Patrick Kennedy. Patrick Kennedy keynoting, quote unquote, alternatives. I mean, I sat and listened to that entire March 28th thing that was put out by AEI again today. And it really is devious what these people are doing and what Patrick Kennedy's message is. And he did repeatedly in this footage, I don't know if you saw the actual video, but in this footage, he repeatedly said things like a checkup from the neck up, who, you know, people have asked me, like, did he really say that? And so it's like, yes, he really is going around saying this, and he really is supporting H.R. 3717. And DJ Jaffe, when they opened up for comments, DJ Jaffe was the first question.
Isn't that interesting?
So it was Sally Stell moderated it, and it was Congressman Murphy, Dr. Lieberman, who is now the, or at least then, I think still the president of the APA or whatever for this year, Tory, and Patrick Kennedy. And Jaffe had the first question.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that, but I'm sorry, I couldn't get all the way through it.
Oh, it was really, I mean, and you know, some people send emails saying that they, or posted stuff saying that they can't deal with this, and it's like, it was the most disgusting thing that I ever heard, an hour and change of onslaught of this propaganda machine, you know, calling for evidence-based practice when they don't have a shred of evidence. I mean, the audacity of these people. And then, you know,
I don't know
that I would be, you know, quote unquote anti-psychiatry if they were telling the truth. Not like anti-psychiatry, anti-fraud. Like,
well, you know, I don't think that if people who are really controlling the money and who are, you know, really controlling the big programs that are out there and who are really controlling the ethics and values of the system, I don't think they were, you know, I don't think that if they were working ethically and being honest, I don't think there would be a need for anti-psychiatry.
It really, right. I mean, I think that this is part of what the problem is. And so Mental Health America has, I just got an email about the Mental Health America 2014 annual conference. I'm not promoting this. Ready? Parity and the Affordable Care Act. Bridging gaps to advance mental health. So Patrick Kennedy, who is, you know, parity, put forth the parity bill. And what a spin. So I guess that this is, on a larger social level, we should just really look at who the players are here and how people are forming and try to wonder for a minute about whether or not there's some kind of larger political aims that are available of some of these folks.
Well, you know, I think that's right, because I think it's obvious that there's a plan. And I think also, you know, in that it is obvious that there's a plan, our movement needs to have a plan as well, regardless of how few of us there may be, and I think that's something that we often lose sight of, is that the number of people who actually care about psychiatry is pretty small, and the number of people who actually care about the critique of psychiatry is even smaller. But at the same time, I think that our movement does need to have a plan.
Do you know that according to this little blurb on this Mental Health America, email, it says that the study that, you know, researchers find 108 clusters, that's a quote, associated with schizophrenia, that if you read down to the bottom, it says, quote, the study published online in Nature confirms that genes connected to regulating the brain chemical dopamine are involved in schizophrenia as predicted, but so are genes involved in the immune system and several associated with heavy smoking. Did you know there was a gene for heavy smoking? How amazing is our DNA code that it would know that a thing called like a tobacco leaf would be created?
Yeah.
And have a gene for it. They've got to be kidding. I mean, it's just, you know, and then this devastating information. survey of Iraq-Afghanistan war vets shows nearly half of vets know a veteran who's attempted suicide. And so, like, they are just setting our country up for such a disaster by suggesting to the public that this load of misinformation can assist people and stop tragedies from occurring. It's just, they are defrauding the public in the worst way. And I think that what you said earlier about following the money, that has got to be something that we're actively, somebody's got to be able to figure that out.
Yes, I agree, because it is all about money.
I mean, yeah.
You know, going back a few years, I don't want to say how many really, to my days, you know, when I was a student in the Master's Social Work program and later I was a teacher in that program, it really didn't matter what course you went into. Almost any textbook that you purchased said evidence-based treatment in the preface. And I wasn't so savvy, you know, back then about issues in the movement and issues in what is, you know, really ethical in just connecting with people who are in distress. But that is a very remarkable point to me now. But, you know, the Council on Social Work Education has approved and recommended all of these texts. I mean, whether you're talking about theory, whether you're talking about practice, whether you're talking about, you know, the macro sense of community development, it's all of these textbooks, evidence-based practice, and I'm sure that you know that since, you know, you've recently completed your PhD studies, your teaching.
I am, and, you know, the truth of the matter is the books, the books are part of the problem. They're such a huge part of the problem.
And the books and the education and the licensing of mental health professionals, that is a huge industry in and of itself. And I can't, you know, quote numbers right now on just how large in a dollar amount that industry is, but I know from my own experience, you know, as a student, as a teacher, and as a formerly licensed clinical person, that it is a huge industry. And you pay...
Oh, it's ridiculous. Eighth edition, every year you need another edition of a textbook. How much has the information really changed? I mean, especially with online, all of the online compatibility stuff that it takes, that it should all be, first of all, take the profit out of textbooks and see how many times they need to rewrite them. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's such a, the whole thing, it's a scam.
Yeah, it is, totally.
I hate that. I hate having to require students to buy textbooks. I look through tons of them before I finally finalize them. And if I can find free ones, I use free ones.
And when you're a licensed mental health professional, at least in the state of Ohio, you know, it's like $75 a year just to keep your license, plus you have to complete, you know, 30 hours in 2 years of continuing education credits, which, I mean, you can find free ones. Certain nonprofits are putting free ones out there. Most of the free ones promote the agenda of whatever nonprofit is putting them out there, or for-profit even. Some for-profits put out the free CEUs just to promote their agendas, I believe. And it's just, if you're practicing independently, you have to have insurance, and it doesn't end. It doesn't
end. Really,
and none of those things are directly relate in any meaningful way to the ability of that clinical person to practice.
Yeah, it really is. It really is such an issue on so many levels, and I'm just wondering if people are out there and have something to say about this or anything else, or would like to talk about what the direction of our movement really needs to do in order to get to society and get around these boundaries that keep on getting put up against us. The number to call is area code 267-521-0167. That's area code 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line, a toll-free line, area code 855-346-3351. If you're online listening in, hi, I hope you're doing great. And at any point, feel free to press 1 or star 1 to get through. Sharon, what did you pass? Press 1 or star 1?
1.
1. Okay, so sometimes it works 1, sometimes it's star 1. I'm not sure, but if you're online listening and you want to talk, please, do press 1 or star 1. And thanks for listening in. What is safely controlling the media? How do you have any control over how these large-scale, massive industry media, right? Because here's another whole industry that's profiting, right? What's that famous journalism line? If it bleeds, it leads. you know what I mean? Like, one of the first things I was told once, it was one of the first things you're taught in journalism school, is if it bleeds, it leads. And that, you know, they make money off of that. This is what sells newspapers. This is what keeps people tuned in. Who's going to sit and watch a sunset on the news? You know what I mean? Like, they're not interested.
You know, I guess, coming strictly from that perspective, it seems like, you know, we should be able to get some of our perspectives into the media, because there are certainly a lot of us out there who are bleeding.
Well, you would think that they would have some compassion for that, but it seems only. That sentence must not be right. That sentence must have. It's probably missing a clause. Like, if it bleeds and people think it's going to come for them next, it leads.
Or if it bleeds and it's sympathetic.
Or you know what I mean? Like, it's right. It, either sympathy or fear, but we generate for some reason. I don't even know. I'm just talking, not even thinking to what I'm saying. But that's why people listen sometimes, I think. That's all right. It's a mix. It's a current events opinion, and every now and then we have something significant in terms of other people sharing their thoughts.
Well, there's been, as you know, a discussion in our community. I think it's been a small discussion, but ongoing, about, you know, 2 points with regard to the media. And there's this school of thought that, something really radical needs to happen, something really remarkable needs to happen, something that is really going to get people's attention needs to happen. And then there's the other school of thought that people need to more so accept the language of the establishment and, coalition with people who are in the system and get our stories and our news out there that way, more so, I guess, through perhaps some individuals who may or may not be sympathetic to the movement, but who have some more power than most of us do to get that information out there. And, I think it's a valid discussion, and I think you and I have known each other for a while, and anyone who knows me knows where I fall on that continuum. But I don't think that matters so much as that, you know, we just have that discussion and make some decisions and make a plan about how, you know, we would move forward with that line of thinking or with that discussion, with those two schools of thought.
Yeah,
and maybe
they're
not mutually exclusive. I don't know.
I think moving forward is important. I think we need to be taking actions, and I think that there are multiple ways in which we can do that. And I'm just curious if people would like to call in and be part of the discussion, if you have ideas about what the next steps of our movement are, how to control the media safely, in Sharon's words, or this idea of an alternative to the alternatives that keeps on coming up and was discussed over Bastille Day amongst some of us. Call in, area code 267-521-0167. First-time callers, welcome. Wild cards, encouraged to apply. If you'd like to talk about something that has nothing to do with any of this but think people should know about it, if you need a toll-free line, area code 855-346-3351. It is Tuesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, July 27th, 2014. So I think that these are important things that we need to market. If 1985 was a time mark of when the federal government bought out our movement, then maybe 2014 is a time mark of when we said, we don't need your stinking money.
Absolutely. 2014, we take it back.
You know what I mean? And I think that there are people all over this country and certainly all over this world that have been abused and tortured by this psychiatric system and the way that it is designed and its institutional nature, and that we need to bond together and speak out. And if there are many of us who are saying this collectively, and going back to the early principles of this movement to abolish forced psychiatric interventions and to stop this fraud, and then perhaps we are ready to move forward.
And I think there was some discussion last night about, you know, what do we believe and what are our guiding principles. And we have our document from the 1982 Toronto Conference.
That's right. That's right, the Declaration of Principles.
The Declaration of Principles, thank you. We have our document, and that's huge. That's absolutely huge that we already have our document. We have our guiding principles, and I think that, you know, whenever we're having these discussions about where we go next, whether it's the Alternatives Conference, the media, our stories, literature, et cetera, I think that we can go back to that document, and I think that it can unify us, at least. Nothing
yeah,
is 100%.
I think for those of us, I think for those of us who can stand by these things, that it does unify us, and I think that that's one of the reasons that we read it every year at the Alliance's Bastille Day demonstration. And like I said, the very first principle of the Declaration of Principles is we oppose involuntary psychiatric. We oppose involuntary psychiatric intervention, including civil committal and the administration of psychiatric procedures, quote, treatments, by force or coercion or without informed consent. And the last the 30th principle is we intend to realize our goals and will not rest until we do so. So for those of you who ever question it, that is something, and I think that it's also important. I'm looking at Graham Bach's website, tripod.com, graham.bach.graham.tripod.com/movement.htm, and right beneath the Declaration of Principles is the Bill of Rights for Psychiatric Inmates in Canada, and underneath all of that, there's a statement that says both of these documents were published in the book Shrink Resistant, The Struggle Against Psychiatry in Canada, and that this is an anthology of personal stories, poetry, and art contributed by more than 40 Canadian psychiatric survivors, and it was edited by Bonnie Burstow and Don White. And so I think people should be aware that this is so beyond just this recent thing. There's nothing new here. The only thing that's new is that perhaps we're calling people out on what had been done, and all the work that had been done over the years that everybody is just casting out like it was, you know, not significant or you know, I love when these people who are getting paid, Sharon, and like I said, I always feel very guilty about talking like this because a lot of them are my friends. But, you know, some of these people who are getting paid that, you know, call this, that you may, that you, if you say anything that's about psychiatric intervention or using the kind of language that I use, that all of a sudden I'm not credible. And it's like I'm using the language of our movement. And so you're saying our movement is incredible? Then why the hell are you in a leadership position in it? Like, how is that, like, the disconnect just really kills me.
I certainly do not have the answer to that. I wish I did.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not, I guess it's kind of rhetorical in some ways because it's not even, I mean, what are you going to do? But this is why we need to be organizing outside of those things that are federally funded. And certainly that was part of what I think Mind Freedom's success has been over the years, is that they didn't take money from industry or religions or government. And, you know, that, you know, they so we, in order to, but how do you combat? See, my issue isn't so much about having a job in it. My issue is how in the public media do you combat this idea of what they're doing and how the audacity of them to be allowed to call it alternatives when all they're doing is selling the same crap to people with a different bow on it?
Well, I think that speaks very directly to the discussion of how do we control the media, or perhaps controlling the media is too far down the road in any type of, you know, action plan for our movement, perhaps gaining more power to have some control in the media is the first step or a prior step, because I think, I certainly believe that we're suffering from a lack of power, which may equate to a lack of money that we're suffering from. Certainly
an oppressed people.
Certainly a lot of us who are doing this work are not doing it for any money or for much money, if at all.
This is true. This is very true. And so I think that adds in the complication of it. And then the people who are, I bet you, I don't know, Sean, I don't know, maybe I'm not really a betting kind of person, unless maybe I'm in Vegas, but who talks, right? I would put money down on the fact that if you asked any single person who is currently institutionalized whether or not they wanted to see their rights protected and have the right to refuse, even if they were voluntarily taking it, have the right to refuse and walk out at any given point that they wanted, I bet every single one of those people would say they wanted out. They wanted that right. I bet, like, the person who's tied down to a bed right now, or the maybe 10,000 people who are tied down to beds right now, or shot up with drugs, or being prepped for electroshock, right, all over the world, right? There's got to be somebody getting electroshock right now, or not being able to eat because they've got to have it in the morning. Like, I bet you those people would say, yeah, I really want to make sure somebody's out there saying that if I don't want to be involved in any of this, I can walk out at any time.
I think that's absolutely true. I think that people in those positions who could, you know, come to a safe place where they are not being coerced would certainly say that. I think that some of them do not have the opportunity to say that because they're coming from a place of, you know, they just want out. And
right.
Many times the only way to get out is to comply. And
well,
I've been there myself.
I think that that's the larger problem. But if you asked, you know, representatives of our quote-unquote movement, they would say that, you know, that people don't want us fighting for their right to not be forced, that they want us to be fighting so that they could get a job or something. Area code 352. I'm sorry, Sean.
Hello, Lauren?
Yes. Hi, you're live on the air.
This is Frank.
Frank, hi.
Yeah, I was at the Mind Freedom Conference just the other day. I thought you were going to show up, but
I unfortunately was unable to come, and I hope that that message got through to people, but if not, yeah. How was it?
It was great, you know, actually. You know, I counted four psychiatrists there, which surprised me.
Huh.
No, I didn't expect that many.
Go figure.
But, excuse me?
Oh, I said go figure.
Yeah. I mean, considering the context, that wasn't a bad thing. I mean, we had tracks running throughout on, like, on Hearing Voices Network, Soteria Houses, Hearing Voices Network,
Peer Respite, and coming off bike drugs. You were in the Peer Respite one.
No, I was on the in the Open Dialogue with.
Oh, okay. Great. Wow. Yeah, I was really unfortunately I wasn't just not able to do it. But I was really saddened by that. And so that's wonderful that I heard it was a great success and that there were so many people there and there were people there from all different countries and that it was really
and I was at the one in 07 too, and that was something. We had a bunch of people from Iceland, but here we had people from we had one guy from China, and we had like three people from three or something like that from Taiwan.
Fabulous.
There might have been someone from Korea, but I don't know. I really don't know. But and
wow.
There was a guy there from Great Britain, from the UK.
That's wonderful. So, Frank, you've been doing this and involved with this movement for decades. What do you think we need to be doing at this point, if I may be so bold as to ask you?
Well, I'd like to see an alternative to alternatives just like you. I mean, the conference, because I was put off by Patrick Kennedy being selected as a keynote, too. I mean, that just threw me for a loop, you know. I might go to this one, and I'm wondering what I should do. I mean, I would hope that his perspective would not be pervasive. I mean, he's really... He really just talks brain disease and all of that. So.
Yeah, and puts his money in it.
Yeah, and I thought the PsyCal conference that you helped to plan in New York way back when was great, and I was wondering what happened to that. Supposedly they were going to go to Boston. It happened in Boston. You know, when that conference was going on, one of these guys from Canada was talking about bringing it up there. That would have, you know, but nothing since. Another place,
which is where
in
it
Canada,
started,
it
yeah, which is where it
before.
Started in
yeah.
Toronto. It would be great to do something like that again in the future. I think whatever name it takes its place under, I'm really hoping that we're going to be able to pull this off and get people together to really pull something that will educate the public in a different way and connect us in a different way than what's happening, because You know, Mr. Checkup from the neck up, I'm just so horrified that he gets a place in this, supporting H.R. 3717 and everything. Like, I don't get it.
That's what worries me. I mean, I thought the Mind Freedom Conference would really well, and, you know, someone like Patrick Kennedy would be so out of place there, and yet he's going to keynote the Alternatives Conference.
Talking about alternatives to alternatives, I have been talking to quite a few people about that idea lately, and I'm just going to throw out a few of the things that were brought up in those conversations, and hopefully people will want to respond to that. It was discussed that perhaps alternatives to alternatives should be a direct action conference, and that it should be based around individuals and organizations who have successfully undertaken direct actions and workshops or presentations about how those things worked or didn't work, and then to actually go ahead after the conference and have a direct action somewhere, anywhere. There are multiple places that are, you know, oppressing our people, to actually have a direct action on one of those institutions directly following the conference. And I'm really on board with that idea. I don't know how other people feel about it. When I was in Western Massachusetts, I was talking with some people who have been my friends over a number of years, and they actually, you know, named some institutions in Massachusetts that would be, you know, ripe for a demonstration. So that's one of the things that was thrown out there with regard to alternatives to alternatives.
Well, I'm not sure calling it alternatives to alternatives is the best idea. My feeling about the Mind Freedom Conference, in a sense, is that they're retreating in a way. It was about alternatives, but not so much political direct action, which is what the conference was it 05? 05. It was more about a conference that, in fact, I missed when they were in D.C. That's just my feeling. I don't know how true it is, you know. I said, I wasn't at that one. But I went to several of the early conferences for human rights and against psychiatric oppression, and we always had we had demonstrations then as a part of the conference, and I agree with you.
I don't think that anyone is actually married to the idea of calling it alternatives to alternatives. I think it matters what we call it, but I don't think that, you know, that point is written in stone. At this point, I mean, we could call it psych out again. Maybe that's a good idea because it's something that people are familiar with. So I don't think anyone is married to the name of alternatives to alternatives. I don't necessarily think that's the best name for it either.
And, you know, and I think that one of the things that I really liked about the Psych Out, well, there's so much that I really liked about it, and so many phenomenal people were there and participated in it, but both of them had demonstrations as part of the conferences, both in Toronto and in New York. And in the New York one, it was the Esmond Green Vigil was right before the conference, and then at the close-ish of the conference, we marched over to the field office of the Office of Mental Health, which happens to be diagonally across the street from where we were, and it was New York City, so you couldn't even tell that there were 50 people standing around, like, demonstrating, you know. But I do think it brought a sense of solidarity amongst people, and for me, of course, it always re-energizes. I think direct actions are important. And I think that we can learn from them, and I think that they don't have to be, I think that they, anyway, I think that they're, I think it's important, and so I would like to see something that definitely had some kind of demonstration involved with it. And I hope you both stay on the line, but area code 510, your line is open. 510, your line is open.
Hi, this is Ted.
Hi, Ted.
Can you hear me?
I can
Hi,
hear you. You're live on the air with Frank and Sharon and myself.
Great. Hi, Frank. Hi, Sharon. I'm sorry that I missed some of it. I was supposed to be tied up all evening, but fortunately I'm not. And I kind of heard the tail end of what you were saying about any conference, including a demonstration somewhere, which is what we used to do before the mental illness system took over our conferences, which kind of tells you where I'm at with this issue, but I think all of you know anyway. What was discussed already?
Oh, lots of things. So I guess trying to figure out how to control the media and how to have our stories be heard in a way that is respectful and moves society and yet is representative of what we want it to be. And then really this issue around the way Mind Freedom has been successful in doing this by not taking government or religious or industry money. And then Frank talked a little bit about the Mind Freedom conference that just happened, which I'm so bummed out again that I missed. Really just talking about what we can do in the future. And we talked a little bit about Psych Out, both in Toronto and in New York, and maybe reviving some of that kind of thing also.
Yeah, well, I just was in touch with Bonnie Burstow, who was a main person with the Psych Out conference, and I'm supposed to take a look at they kept some kind of minutes or whatever she called it, and I really want to take a look at that, because when I saw it a few years ago, we saw the announcement, it was very exciting. It seemed like just what we should be doing. But, of course, Bonnie, and then also there's Don Weitz in Toronto as well. These are like old-time people that remember what things used to be like. And what things used to be like is we didn't get kept out of the media. We were on the media all the time, and the reason we're not on the media now is we don't do anything. I mean, who cares about this alternatives conference? It just lets everybody moan and complain, you know, vent harmlessly. I guess venting is the word. Who cares about that? Who cares about peer whatever, where you pay somebody to encourage other survivors, although I guess they don't call themselves survivors, other people stuck in the system, to take their drugs and cooperate? Now, who's going to get excited about that except the folks that are getting big salaries from the system to do it, you know? I mean, I think it's just shameful, really shameful that people would do that. And people act as if when people like me talk this way, they say, oh, it's just factionalism, whatever. But, you know, this isn't in some kind of vacuum. I mean, we had a movement that was really doing stuff. I was just reading an autobiography by a guy named Wade Hudson. I don't know if any of you heard of him. He's one of the founders of the Network Against Psychiatric Assault, which I was in. And you wouldn't believe the stuff that he wrote about in our midnight visit with Governor Brown and things like that. And everything we did was on the television. And when I first came to the Bay Area, to the San Francisco Bay Area, I turn on the television, there's Leonard Frank, who some of you know, and he's having a demonstration at some shock hospital. Leonard's out in front. He's on TV. And he looks like, if anybody knows him, he looks like this Old Testament prophet, you know, with a long gray beard and stuff. And he's saying, shock treatment is an outrage. And, of course, it is. But Leonard delivers those lines so well. And then I turned on the radio here, and there's Wade Hudson talking about forced drugging. Now, do we hear about that anymore? No, of course not. You know why not? Because we're not doing anything. And so I don't think there's any magic formula for getting on the media. I think we have to do stuff. We have to act like any other movement. And we will get – one of the things that really outrages me is this alternatives conference presents this – because one of the things they do that we really have to deal with is they indoctrinate new people in the movement, And their version of history is there was no movement before the Alternatives Conference. Well, let me tell you, there was a hell of a movement. It was 15 years of a movement, and we were doing really well in getting stuff done. And, of course, a lot of people know that I organized, together with David Oakes, who was there at the time, the vote in Berkeley to ban shock treatment. We got a whole city to vote overwhelmingly to ban shock treatment, and you can bet that got lots of publicity. Do you think SAMHSA is going to finance a move to ban shock treatment somewhere at the Alternatives Conference? Of course not. They want you to just
SAMHSA is anti-psychiatry, according to Murphy, so that would be right up their alley. That would be exactly the kind of thing they would fund, Ted.
Well, yeah, sure, they're anti-psychiatry. Well,
I mean, come
we
on.
Gotta be,
no,
I'm anti-psychiatry.
Yeah.
We have to show them what a real anti-psychiatry movement would be like.
Well, that's what I said.
Yeah, but unfortunately, the reason we have this alternative now is because we did have a real anti-psychiatry movement, and they managed to just buy everybody off. And then one of this guy, whose name I won't mention because he likes to threaten lawsuits, the guy who wrote to the NIMH and said if they would fund him, he'd see that the radicals were smashed. Now, I have a Freedom of Information Act request in, but I don't have the letter in front of me. However, he really profited off that, and he was one of the organizers of the First Alternatives Conference, and he came to our last conference and wrecked it. He's a very slick guy, and that's what happened, and people just gave up in disgust and hopelessness, and we've been dealing with that for a long time. But I think now what I see is people realize we have to get off our butts. Look what's happening. I mean, this Murphy bill, it would have been laughed out of court 30 years ago. We couldn't have put anything like this, into the into Congress's agenda. It just wouldn't fly. Our interests were being paid attention to, not that we have huge amounts of power. But I think, from my estimate, is that at that time, we were just as advanced in our rights as gay people were. But gay people didn't get bought off. So look at where gay people are at now. I mean, they have respect now. People are falling all over themselves to support gay marriage, which may not be so great in itself, but it's a symbolic thing that gay people are treated with respect now. Do we get treated with respect? But one reason you don't get treated, you know, the gay people have this thing, you know, you've all heard it. They just go out and say, we're here and we're queer, get used to it. And I love it. And we should be doing that too. We're crazy and proud, you know, just get used to it. And, you know, we have 30 million...
At Howie the Harp's memorial in the mid-90s, what a loss to this movement that was. People were chanting, we're here, we're weird, get used to it, as we were walking from Sanders to Bellevue. I think that this is part of it. I think line 202, your line is open?
Yeah, this is Yvonne Smith in Washington, D.C.
Hi, Yvonne.
I'm attending the NICL conference. That's the National Council of Independent Living. And today, I mean, this was the first time I had attended this conference. They had a rally. They had 800 people in wheelchairs, some people with no legs, a whole line going up Constitution Avenue to the Capitol, about 800 people. And the day before, I mean, I have to say this, and I'm part of my local NICL, and these people across disabilities, these individuals, they have not given up their human rights for the dollars. In fact, we had like a 30-some page legislative sheet where they had about 15 different pieces of legislation that the NICL had either endorsed, or there was some, like the Murphy bill, that they were against, organized according to regions and states, knowing what their legislative positions were, and going up to the Hill. Even the rally, Senator Harkin came out to the rally, and then people dispersed and went to see their various senators and congressmen so that those legislations, including the CRPD, pushing for that treaty to be ratified. So there are other people that are doing things, and there were people out there taking pictures. I just came in, so I haven't been able to look at the news to see if it's on there, but there was.
I'll bet it is, because this is another example. These other movements do stuff, and we don't.
Mm-hmm.
These disabled people, you know, they're really putting themselves out there, and they're working for their liberation, and we're going to alternatives conferences. I mean, give me a break.
I wouldn't say that. There are other people that are working, because yesterday at lunch I talked to some people. What I think I've seen this happen over the last few years. Other people have successfully tried to indicate to people that they speak for us. They do not, and then other people want to play nice because, just like you said about the dollars, you know, when you start talking about some of these other things that Lauren talked about and that you're talking about, people kind of say, they have their little hands like, sit down, sort of like. And some, you know what I'm saying? They're saying, well, you know, we're not talking about that right now or whatever else, because the dollars are in play. And I think what happens is some people have woken up. Maybe they haven't woken up, but, you know, alternatives is just one conference. Most places around the country now, if they have state networks, they may have a state conference. But we are, like you said, the radical fringe, I shouldn't say so radical, a lot of times we're excluded.
Well, I think it's worse than just excluded, which we definitely are. There's no two ways around that.
Ignored, excluded.
But I think it's the fraud that it's perpetuating, that it used to be about stopping this field from being able to torture us, and now it's about us being part of this field to torture us. And so
people are getting paid. It's like the gas. What happens is some people are getting paid, and they're getting paid very well. The other people, they're not getting paid. They're getting a little bit of money, and they make other people who maybe are getting a little bit feel like they're part of something.
Right, but they're also in positions of where they're torturing us. When you have people who call themselves a quote-unquote peer and they're on an ACT team or a mobile crisis team or some shit like that, and they're coming out into the community coming after us and trying to convince us to go back to the institution with them, I mean, that is just the biggest deception from what it was that was originally intended by, you know, support. And, I mean, I know obviously you know this, Yvonne, and everybody else, but, I mean, for people not listening, I mean, that's, you know, for people who don't know about this, who may be listening, I mean, that's a big part of the fraud that's being perpetrated.
I couldn't be doing things like that and sleep at night, see. You know, I just had a call. I get these calls. And I got one tonight. I got a Facebook PM. Someone called me, and I get them all the time. At least every week I get at least one asking me about a mental health provider or whatever else. And I said, don't ask me that question, because I say that, and I say, you ask the person what else is going on. I said, well, to get your physical needs taken care of, maybe you don't need to have all of that. And I said, I can't make a recommendation in good faith. You know, I would say, you know, try one of the large universities where you can have interdisciplinary teams. But I don't even feel comfortable. I don't refer people to public mental health, number one. If you want to interview a therapist or something like that that has your values and whatever you want is great. But you know, I just don't believe in recommending people to public mental health, and even with a disclaimer to others, because I think that people should be trying to get out of being involved with mental health.
Absolutely.
And pay attention to their whole health. This young lady that called me, and I hope that she's listening on the line. Now, she has sleep apnea, hypertension. She's over 300 and some pounds. She is supposed to be going tomorrow to a nutritionist. I said, you know, and she's got some other issues because her family was in a cult, and some of them were abused as children. So I said, maybe if you want to, you know, I can tell you a good, you know, primary care doctor that deals with people that are trying to get their weight under control or whatever else. And then she was telling me about what she was taking.
I'm a little, yeah.
And
okay.
you just say, well, you throw up your hands, and I said, I can't recommend anything. I would just suggest that you take care of your whole health and not
or not. I guess. But I don't think that that's, I mean, I guess when I'm thinking about alternatives to alternatives, the last thing I'm worrying about is whether or not I'm taking care of myself. It's like the least of my concerns. Like, I am, when I think about alternatives to alternatives, it's like I want to be able to do what I want to do without anybody telling me about what I have to be doing. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not thinking about, like, why do, and I know that this is very unpopular, but why do I have to be well? Why do I have to be happy? Why do I have to, you know, think politically like other people? Why do I need to adjust my life? Why do I need to go to sleep? Why do
no,
I need to wake
no,
up?
No, but
like, do you know what I mean?
Some people, they think about this as access. Like for you know, like I was talking to another person. We were talking about banning all forced treatment. But the thing about it, for some people, they feel it's about access, and that's why you have to listen to them, because some people do want. Some people, they are not informed. They do not know, you know, that 5,
therefore,
10, 15,
it to be available 15. For me, I don't know that crack is addictive, therefore I should be able to smoke it. I feel like it's the same kind of thing, because that's what benzos are. They're harder to come off of than crack. I don't know why we're protecting, like, in my mind, when we're talking about some kind of conference that's an alternative to alternatives, I don't want to hear anything about any of that, like, static.
What would your thoughts of alternative to alternatives look like?
I want to talk about that a little bit. I have some ideas about what the conference should be like.
Ted?
For one thing, and this is maybe, I don't know if it's contradicting you a little bit, but one thing I'd like to see come out of this is a sense of solidarity among people. Back in 1974, when our movement was really just getting started, I was involved in helping organize a conference in Topeka, Kansas, and there was just a tremendous amount of positive feelings that people had for each other.
Community.
There was a kind of a community there, and I think... And I had a lot to do with it, because I had been in the Vancouver Emotional Emergency Center, where people who were freaking out could come and get emotional support. So I did a lot of hugging and got a lot of hugging. And people really got into it. And part of the thing that was going on then, though, was we were very optimistic. Our movement was just getting off the ground. I mean, the Network Against Psychiatric Assault had just started, and they came, you know, nobody ever heard of them in Kansas. And they started telling us how they already had an assembly person introduced a bill to stop shock treatment, which didn't pass in that form. But now I think what's happened is I think the people that really want to do stuff that aren't just looking for jobs with, I'm just so frustrated not to mention any names, jobs with these sellouts, I think people are very demoralized, because everybody sees we're really in a bad way. Our backs are up against the wall. Our movement is very weak. And I think, besides having a demonstration, which is always good for morale, and besides something else, which I'll get to in a second about strategy, I think it's very important that this conference, that people leave this conference with a sense that they have solidarity with other people. We're starting to sign our letters to each other, some of us, with love and solidarity. And I, God, I'm starting to cry here. We need solidarity and we need love. We need to have respect for one another and caring about one another, which you're certainly not going to get, but when everybody's competing to see what kind of jobs they're going to get in the mental health system. So we need to build up people's morale that way, and we need to have people leave feeling they're part of something larger than themselves. Now, one of the main things I want to see coming out of this conference, though, is strategy. I don't think that we strategize very much. Now, I think a lot of the listeners to this show read Mad in America, and they've been two people, Bonnie Burstow and Richard Lewis, who, by the way, they're very anti-psychiatry, but they're not survivors, but that's fine. And they both wrote some very interesting articles about strategy, because we don't, well, part of the reason we don't get anything done with the limited resources that we have is I don't think we think enough about what we need to be doing. And Bonnie was encouraging that, and Richard was encouraging that, and I want to encourage that. What I like to see happen at this conference, which I think should be small, I don't think we should try to get hundreds of people who are going to start arguing. I think we should find whatever number of people who are firmly committed to an anti-psychiatry position. Now, I'm happy to work with people like Bonnie Burstow and Richard Lewis, who are kind of mental health professionals, but they're anti-psychiatry. But whether it includes them or just includes survivors, I think it has to be people that are all in agreement to start with. So we're not going to argue about principles or whatever. We're going to discuss tactics and strategy. We just have to figure out what we can do with our limited resources. And I think, to start with, just having a demonstration is good. And I know also it's good. I know that Sharon just wrote an excellent article about the Bastille Day vigil in Albany, New York. And I think that's also good that people should hear when we do something like that. I think it's very, very exciting to do something like that. And I think it's very good when we publicize it. And I'm glad that Sharon's article, I assume, is going to show up at Mad in America. So I think we have to encourage one another. I think we have to encourage one another emotionally. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that. I mean, I'm certainly far from being a shrink. I think people need to leave the conference that we're going to have with a sense that they're part of a larger movement, that we're all in it together, that we have solidarity, that we care about one another, and also with a perspective on what we can do with a limited amount of resources we have. I think one area we could focus on is children, the things that everybody gets upset about when children are abused, and God knows there's plenty of abusive children, and I think focusing on that would be very good. I know when I led the campaign to ban shock treatment in Berkeley, I think one of the reasons it succeeded, since I was kind of up front and the main spokesperson, is that I got it when I was a child. And everybody, of course, is disgusted at the thought of somebody getting it when they were a child. Now, electric shock treatment. Now, I'm actually thinking of, I'm already strategizing. It's possible I may be moving to Portland soon. I think Portland is a very good place to operate. Now, this stuff, we got things on the ballot in Berkeley because California has what's called the initiative and referendum. You don't have to go through the state legislature. You can sign petitions and get things put on the ballot. They have that in Oregon, too. They have that in Portland, Oregon, too. Portland, Oregon is a very liberal place. Okay, there's a liberal place. There's been a lot of activity on and off about our movement in Portland. Our modern movement started in Portland with the Insane Liberation Front in 1970. I think, to me, it's a good place to focus energy, and I'd like to, like one of the issues, for instance, that I know a lot of people will resonate to is this garbage about they threaten parents with pulling their kids out of school, or even worse, taking away custody if they won't drug their children. Now, the average person on the street doesn't like that. And I think if you put something like that on the ballot, it would pass almost anywhere. I think also when you have a situation like in Oregon, and where else was I thinking? There's another, Colorado as well. You have one large, somewhat important city that's quite progressive, and then you have a whole lot of conservative small towns scattered around the state. But I think you have to keep in mind You're all familiar with the Tea Party, right? Libertarianism and all that stuff. Well, I'm not a Tea Party person, that's for sure. But the thing is, this concept of libertarianism, this idea that the government shouldn't tell us what to do, well, sometimes I think it has to be done. But where does psychiatry get its power? Because the government gives them this power. And I don't think people like the idea that the government is telling them that they have to drug their children. So that's an issue that if I get the chance, I'm going to work on. If I move to Portland, I'm going to try to put that on the ballot. And you can bet if that passes, it'll get publicity because we don't do anything. Nobody's paying any attention to peer or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah,
but they're gonna pay
let
me just finish one. I know I'm talking nonstop, but let me just say a couple more sentences. But they will pay attention if we even just put it on the ballot, much less win. I'm finished now for a while.
No, I think you made so many good points, and yeah, just absolutely, just even getting it on the ballot, not even about winning. I mean, winning would be great, but I think I just want to make sure that, you know, Bonnie Bristow's come up several times on this episode, and of course throughout, and I'm honored to be able to say that I am working with her, and I really appreciate what she does. And if people want to hear her talking about strategies and other kinds of issues, she's talked on many radio shows, but on this one also. And there's an archive of a conversation with Bonnie Bristow that people can find on the Talk with Tenny page. And I really think that when we listen to people who are who were there, like you, Ted, and Bonnie and Don Weitz and others who were around, Frank, who were around in the 80s and before this whole buyout of the movement, I think we really get a lot. And I really appreciate what you're talking about, solidarity. And I think that that is essential. And I think that activism brings us closer to having that solidarity for each other.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
And why, you keep on saying, why bother with all of this peer stuff? Because this is the reality of, like, where all of these people are who are being fooled into this and need to be educated about it. But also, could you imagine if the 2,000-some-odd people who were attending alternatives came out to a protest in whatever city alternatives was held at? Like, if they were doing what was done, and that they were having their meetings and talking about whatever they're talking about, and, you know, like, you know, but then going out and demonstrating, and that 2,000 people were
the last protest was in Portland.
Huh?
Yeah.
When Jazz was killed, and there was the last protest was in Portland, maybe about 7 or 8 years ago.
It probably was 9 feet in the year.
We used to have planks. They used to have planks, caucuses at night, and believe it or not, they would have. I don't know if you were around then, but I've only been going to alternatives since 1998. But they used to have planks, and they would have 50 people in the room, and we would go back and have consensus, and we would have cases done, and people developed relationships with people across the country, and they worked on stuff. And then after about 2002, this is because I'm relatively young, it seemed like as soon as the peer specialists came on the scene, this all changed.
I know a big
change. It might
change.
Have been before that, but it changed dramatically. I mean, you know, David Oakes used to be part of alternatives.
I know that in 1999, and so this would have been 14 years after the International Conference on Human Rights and Psychiatric Oppression was bought out. In 1999, they started inviting professionals, and there was a whole bunch of people from New York who just threw their arms up and was like, done. And so I know that that was another layer of things that happened. And then in 2008, when I was very involved with it because it was in New York and was not allowed to print the word advocacy in the brochure about the workshop and the history room that I had put in, and they made me change, like, I had to, so anyway, yeah, so there was all, you know, so it was like, wait a second, you can't print the word advocacy at the alternative conference? Like, are you fucking, I'm sorry, my language is just awful tonight. But,
yeah.
Wait a second, it's me, Lauren, it's because I got on the call.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's my understanding that if it's not a frequent occurrence and it's not on purpose, okay.
I still can't believe this story. Who told you you couldn't use the word advocacy? That just sounds incredible. They claim to be advocates. I don't get it.
I have all the emails somewhere in a saved email file, but it was whoever was...
Oh, my God, send them to me.
Whoever was above me, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I was just a person on the committee. I was putting the thing in. I don't know. But it was somebody who was, you know, running the conference. Like, whichever group it was them.
Which conference was this?
It was the Buffalo conference.
I want to talk to you about this. I'm writing an article about it. I didn't hear about this part.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Later.
And so anyway, I think that there's, you know, some things that are inherently problematic to what has gone on. I'm livid that Patrick Kennedy is, like, involved in anything that is having, you know, and the idea that, like, his involvement is to get him to know us and for us to, you know, like, I don't know, for us to get to know him so we'll want to buy his book next year when it comes out? I mean, is that what we're supposed to be getting to know him for?
No, his involvement is to keep the money flowing
for this
contract. Someone
today that, because I asked about that. They said that, as I had suspected, they said there were several people that were pushing for him to be on the, as a speaker. So, you know, like I said, they have these committees. And just like I remember the year when they asked Will Hall and Whitaker Chambers, and at first Sampson said no, it wasn't. But it looks like Kennedy, this is a long string for the, I said this last night, this is a long string of speaking engagement that he's done this year. I think he's doing NAMI. He did the National Council of Behavioral Health, National Mental Health America. So I think that everybody seems to feel like they have to have him there, and some people have heard him and think that he must be there.
Maybe this is part of the problem, because what I'm seeing is that, and this was written on a public post, and I really don't want to stir this up because it's not about the people. I feel guilty and horrible every time that somebody I know gets caught up in this whole thing and I wind up having to talk about it. Because it's not like how I ordinarily am. But that being said, you know, the idea that he's being positioned as a, quote, important player in D.C., and that, you know, that he's been invited so that we can listen to him and have, you know, him meet us, and that, you know, for him to be, you know, learn about what our social justice and mental health movement is. I don't know. Anybody ever hear of the social justice and mental health movement before? This must be a new movement.
What?
The social justice and mental health. To learn about our movement for social justice and mental health. And so Kennedy talking at the AEI thing was that, you know, social justice was like, it's like going to the, quote, colored water fountain. If you have to go down the hall to get mental health services, then your general practitioner should be giving you a checkup from the neck up. And that's basically what he said on that video.
Right. Well, you know, I'm listening to this kind of this controversy here, and I just don't get it. What do you expect from the Alternatives Conference? Why do you think it's so strange that this pro-force treatment congressman has been invited? There's nothing strange about it at all. It makes perfect sense. It completely reflects the politics of the people who are profiting off the Alternatives Conference. I mean, we're talking about the Alternatives Conference. We're talking about the Alternatives Conference as if it's really something important. And you know what? It isn't. It's just a whole bunch of money from the mental health system. It's a total fraud. It's what you call an astroturf movement. And our job is to develop our real movement. I mean, I'm bad-mouthing it because I want people to rally around and have this alternative to alternatives, but we can't get rid of it. We can't get rid of it, and we can't take it over because it's firmly in control of the federal mental health system. It's simply a project of SAMHSA, and they openly say that. So what are we going to do about it? Nothing. We just have to rally our people And basically, they don't represent anything but mental health money. So I don't know why. I mean, I'm all in favor of denouncing Patrick Kennedy and denouncing him being there. But it's not as if alternatives really are the conference of that represents people that have been abused by psychiatrists. It's a conference of the mental health system and the people they've paid to be do public relations for them, because that's all these so-called consumer leaders are. They're just public relations men for SAMHSA. That's all they are.
Well, what do you have instead?
What should we have
to counterbalance?
We should have a conference of our own of people who really want to fight the abuses of psychiatry. And one of the things which I think several people mentioned was part of that conference, and it's important in itself, but it's very symbolic as you go off and you demonstrate somewhere, because that's what our movement's supposed to be about. We're supposed to be about fighting psychiatric abuse. And, of course, no matter where you have this conference, if you had it in the middle of the Arctic tundra, you'd find some nasty psychiatric. I mean, they're all over the place. We have to have a conference of people who really want to fight psychiatry's abuses, and we have to have a conference where we start thinking about how we can do it. And that's not what alternatives is for. Alternatives is to keep everybody quiet, to hire, to pay the kind of people that they're paying now, the people who are perfectly happy to keep us under psychiatry's thumb as long as they get paid big money to do it. But we don't need so-called leaders like that. We need people with an ethical commitment. And I think there's a lot of us now. I think just about everybody on the program right now is like that. I think there's a lot of people who know this is wrong, and it's time that we got ourselves together and went off in the right direction and just leave them. They'll always be there because the mental health system will support them. But we got to make it clear they don't represent anything but mental health money. That's all they are. It's totally a creature of the mental health system.
To make things so plain, yes.
Well, it is plain. To me, it seems very simple and obvious. The only thing that wasn't so simple is I think everybody was very demoralized, and I think largely people still are. But I see now, I can sense, that there's an awful lot of people realizing that we got to do something. They're not. A lot of people would tell me, well, alternatives, you know, my friends are there. I get to see them every year. But now those same people aren't saying that anymore because they realize we're in big trouble, and it's because our movement that would have fought back isn't fighting back. So this Murphy Bill, all of a sudden, these guys want to fight the Murphy Bill, but the only reason they want to fight the Murphy Bill is to keep the money flowing to them. I'll tell you what compromise would work for them. If Murphy would just leave their funding in, then they'd be happy to support his bill. You know. But you know what? I'm doing what I say we shouldn't do, which is I'm trashing alternatives. And what I think we should talk about is what's our conference going to be like, you know? And I think we need solidarity. We need to really be good to each other.
I was wondering if it would be worthwhile to demonstrate at alternatives sometime.
I'm for it. I don't know if you could get people to do it, but I think if we did it would be very effective. It would raise a lot of questions.
I bet we could easily jam like 6 or 8 of us into a Motel 6 room.
No more Motel 6s,
I think that's
sixes,
a great
please.
Idea.
Forget about Motel 6s. That's a private joke, okay? but yeah, okay, so we squeeze 6 or 8 people into a Motel 6 room, and then what do we do? I'm interested in hearing this, Lauren.
Well, then, I mean, if you really do it, like, you know, the stories from days of old, and even how the youth movement did it when we were doing it in the early and late 90s, you know, that there would just be 6, 8, 10 of us, you know, $5 each thrown in on hotel rooms and going where we were going and doing, you know, and just, you know, like doing it cheaply, that you can go and protest the alternatives conference. And
conference has got to be so expensive.
In other words, like the people who are going to alternatives are spending like thousands of dollars, and we could probably, if we jammed in, you know, a couple of rooms. Anyway, that my
the
point
agencies
is
they work for us.
I'm glad to hear people bring this up because I've had this fantasy for quite a while. The only thing is, If you only have 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 people, it's good. But in order to get publicity, you would have to do civil disobedience. You would have to get arrested. Because otherwise, you would be kind of unseen. You know, it just wouldn't look like much. But if the local paper in Florida could say 12 people got arrested protesting this conference, and they feel the conference really just represents the mental health system and not them, that would get into the paper. However, we would also get into jail. And they're going to have it where? In Orlando, Florida? You can bet the Disneyland cops are not going to be very nice to us if we do it. So I'm just cautioning people here.
Protest some something that was happening locally.
I think you also can get, I mean, if you work it well enough and if you connect it to things that are locally meaningful to people, that you can organize press without having to go that far. And I think the thing, you know, one of the things people don't realize is that when people have gotten arrested for civil disobedience, it's for, like, you know, people think, like, what you were doing. Like, you know, one of the best stories I heard is that people were handing out flyers that had information on them. You know what I mean? Like, and that was the civil disobedience that was being, you know, undertaken. So I don't think it has to be, like, this big thing. And I think that, I think that if people, you know, choose to do that, then that's a choice. But my understanding of what people wind up very often is that they are within their rights, and their rights become immediately limited on the spot because of somebody else's say-so.
I find it hard to believe that they would want us to be arrested. And also, as you said, handing out leaflets is certainly a First Amendment right. But I do think his initials are JR, okay? I'm kind of afraid to whatever. If he's going to try and get local publicity for that conference, and the reporters are going to be bored to tears because it's a very boring operation. And if there's controversy is always good. And I think you're right. We had some hard-hitting leaflets that we were handing out saying this thing is a fraud. We might get publicity way out of proportion to our numbers, and I love this idea. If there's enthusiasm for it, I think it would be fantastic. I'll come there. I'll hand out leaflets. I'll go to goddamn Florida and hand out leaflets and say this thing is a total fraud and people shouldn't take it seriously. I'll be happy to do that. I think that's a great idea. We need to discredit these people because they're total
fraud. You are in Florida, right?
Yeah, yeah. What? Well, what I'm going to say is that I think that, you know, we should be resorting to civil disobedience. You know, I was just talking to David about that once a while back, and he said, oh, we'd done this and that 30 years ago. I'm saying, the need's gone down.
Well, right.
I don't think that the need has gone down. I think that we are in a position now where we need to do what we need to do. And I'm not exactly sure what that is, but I think that we have a few people who are not afraid to do whatever needs to be done, and that we need to, you know, have solidarity among those people and to just go forward without fear, because you know, the things that have been done to us in the past, I mean, how much worse can it get? You know, how many worse things can they really do to us?
Well, Patrick Kennedy has his way. I mean, that's why I care, Ted. Not about him being at the Alternatives Conference, that this guy is getting any potential, tie-in into what's going to wind up happening on a federal level, any more than he already has with the freaking Parity Act. You know what I mean? Like, this is dangerous.
Like,
that people need
that's
to be informed.
Then do they become lobbyists? Former congressmen and senators, although Kennedy is not based here, but that's what, I'm not saying that's what he's doing, but that's what former congressmen and senators do. They become lobbyists for different interests. Old friends and ties, and you know, I'm not going to say that he's an evil person, but maybe he can be turned for good. Who knows?
I do think that attacking Kennedy publicly would get some publicity as well.
And I'm just saying, if he wants to come on the show and talk, 267-521-0167.
I wish.
Why don't you invite him, Lauren, see what he says? Well, he might come on the show. You know? Let him right now he's going on this an alternative. He's got Joe Rogers telling him, oh, you're speaking for the downtrodden or some crap like that, you know, the NAMI line.
But if all of a sudden
people like us say that he's betraying us.
Sorry.
Yvonne?
Hello?
Yes.
What were you trying to say?
I was saying that it's not Joe Rogers. It's people on the committee asked for him. There were other people. I mean, just like people wanted Whitaker Chambers or Will Hall, you know. I mean, we have a variety of people that think different kinds of ways, that have different experiences, that have remembrance of the Kennedy family, you know, differently. And
that Jackie Kennedy was elected.
Those were people that were on the committee. So I've been on the alternatives committees only twice in my lifetime. And usually people put forth a lot of names, and it's only the person who gets a lot of votes that usually is the person who gets to be the keynote speaker. So
it makes me worry a lot about who's on that committee now, because these people are, because Kennedy is so medical model. I mean, he's talking brain disease, and the guy's also for criminalization of marijuana.
And he has his memoir about a common struggle coming out in 2015, like there's anything common going on here. And, you know, and don't forget about that caller who called in, Virginia, who called in informing us about a new book expose on Jackie Kennedy, that JFK had her electroshocked and, you know, shipped off because they wound up getting into a fight in the street in front of their house when he was still a senator because she was sick of him cheating on her. And his response was to have her electroshocked. And, of course, there was the predecessor of the lobotomy that destroyed
his sister.
Yeah.
Rosemary Kennedy, yeah.
And so there's a long history of these people, you know, screwing around. And I would, knowing everything I know now, I would bet that part of the Community Mental Health Services Act came about because she had to be institutionalized. And he wanted that to happen in and out without anybody needing to know that she needed to go into an institution. Sorry,
I think the Community Mental Health Services Act is part of the problem because now you've expanded the system and you've got this hospital without walls.
Yep.
And it's just, you know, it's just growing and growing.
Yeah. And then they can go in the morning and come home in the afternoon,
and
nobody knows where they've been all day. And I'm telling you I'd put money on the fact that that was part of the motivation. But, you know, the one brain research stuff that he's doing with the guy who's his other co-founder is One Voice, Stigma, Wipeout person, whoever his name is. Hold on one second. I'll find out his name. I shouldn't be saying things like this.
You're trying to look that up. I like the idea of putting things on the ballot. You know, I mean, we can talk about history for a long time, and people should know about history. But I like the idea of, you know, putting things on the ballot in places. You know, like no forced chemical intervention for children, things like that. You know, like you had mentioned that everyone has a soft spot for a child, and getting one little beachhead. Because I went and look and see how many signatures I need to have that done here. I think things like that are something that we can educate people about how to do, and that even people that might be a small group can gather signatures and have things put on the ballot. I think that would be something
absolutely
positive.
Absolutely. In fact, Yvonne, you making me realize that's one kind of mini workshop we could give at our Alternatives to the Alternatives conference, how to put things on the ballot. Now, you can't do it everywhere. I was disappointed to find out the Vermont, you can't do it in Vermont, even though Vermont is a great kind of state to do this in. But I know you can do it in Oregon. You certainly can do it in California because we did it. And
we
I
can
think,
do it in Washington, too, I believe.
I don't know. It tends to be in the western states, but not entirely. Didn't somebody tell me, was it you, Sharon? Somebody was telling me it was done in Massachusetts. Some kind of issue was on the ballot in Massachusetts put on by the voters. Sharon, was that you?
Yeah, no, I don't think that was me. That does not come to mind.
But you heard of it, though, huh? Well, I heard
another,
of it. Some eastern state.
Is you can have people don't, I remember Naomi Henson talking about not being on advisory groups, but almost every state has a board, medical board. You know, getting on the medical board of places, if you're not going to be co-opted and not be on one person, but to be two people. So people can be disciplined. You know, I think I asked this question. I don't know if I asked it of someone at the conference or I asked it online on the blog radio. I don't think any doctor has been convicted of hurting anybody that's prescribed these chemicals or that's given ECT, except for maybe one of Lauren's callers.
Yeah, that's right. It's something we can demand, although I haven't wrapped my mind around it, but these psychiatrists are committing crimes right and left. You all may remember this little girl, Rebecca Riley, who died at the age of 4 from massive psych drugging. And
yes,
the doctor was giving her all these fucking, excuse me, all these damn drugs without even seeing her. So she dies. She's 4 years old. All her internal organs have failed. And nothing happened to this doctor. Now, if you or I did something like that, we'd be in jail for the rest of our lives because that's murder. That's really, in most states, that would be second-degree murder. Well, you you have reckless behavior.
That might be the first chisel, because I think that I remember this over a decade ago, and that was what NAMI was saying, that they were going to have a campaign to focus on children, because people find children to be very sympathetic. Just like in the Newtown case, you know, we have lots of people being killed by guns, but when they're 5 and 6 year olds, you know, that hits people. So I think
Yeah.
And I think that this is wonderful, and I love the idea of a workshop about how to get it on the ballot. And so I'm going to charge you, Ted, and whoever wants to do this with trying to put something like that together, and let's try to figure out a space and a time and a way that we can do it, and maybe we can even do these kinds of things online where people can listen over their computers like they're listening to this telephone conversation right now.
I got one thing.
And
they can
just do training.
Not having children drugs, I think it's something that people can get behind. I think that it shouldn't be drugging, period. It shouldn't even, the word force shouldn't even come into it. You know, little tiny bodies do not need these harsh chemicals, period.
It's and yet the word force does come into it, because sometimes we are forced as children. And that needs to be stopped, too. I did find that information out of the organization that Patrick Kennedy co-founded. It is called One Mind, and you can go look at this information anywhere on onemind.org. On the Meet Our Founders page, the other gentleman I was talking about, his co-founder, is named Garen Staglin. And from his bio, it says, Garen, the co-founder and co-chairman of One Mind, and the co-founder, president, and trustee of the International Mental Health Research Organization. During the past 18 months, the International Mental Health Research Organization and the Staglins Music Festival for Mental Health event have raised more than $140 million for mental health charities and research. He is also the co-founder and president of Bring Change to Mind, a nonprofit organization dedicated to eliminating the stigma of mental illness. You may have seen some of their videos that came out recently. So then it goes on. He's a very accomplished man. He's a businessman. He does all kinds of stuff. Blah, blah, blah. Last paragraph. Garen, his wife Shari, and their children, Brandon and Shannon, are founders of the Staglin Family Vineyard in Rutherford, California. Actively involved for 25 years in the wine industry, the Staglin's motto is, quote, great wine for great causes. And through the operation of their winery, business interests, and support of various charitable causes, they have indeed lived up to that philosophy. In the last 10 years, causes they have chaired or donations from their wines have generated more than $750 million. So that's Patrick Kennedy's co-founder on One Mind, which is, you know, the organization that is doing all the brain research because, you know, the brain is the problem. And this is a brain disease. And this is the person who is opening up and getting all kinds of support and doing the tours, like Yvonne keeps saying and reminding us, that he's been out and about hitting the streets, and whose 2015 book is published, you know, next year about the common struggle that he has with his addiction and mental illness, and how, you know, he ran into a barricade. But when I'm blanking on her name again, ran into the barricade. She was in Washington, D.C. He ran into a barricade in D.C. at the Capitol because he was high on prescription drugs. When she ran into the barricade in D.C., she was shot dead. So, you know, his common struggle.
Mary Ann Carey was her name.
Thank you. So her common, his common struggle. And I'm serious. Patrick Kennedy, if you'd like to talk, you should call the Talk with Tenny tip line at area code 718-273-8708. Maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe I'm misreading everything that you're putting out here. Maybe I'm getting the wrong spin and I'm not really, you know, feeling what you're saying. But I think that you're going to do grave damage to large portions of this population and many, many, many children and future generations to come if you get things your way. And with the way the Parity Act went, and that this is just like any other, you know, medical illness, with the exception of the fact that you have no proof that it exists. Every other medical illness, there's proof that it exists. And I just think society needs to wake up and pay attention, and I'm excited that there's going to be something where there's going to be some solidarity amongst us generated.
And I'm happy to be available to Patrick Kennedy as well if he prefers to participate in a print journalism article as opposed to going on a live radio talk show.
Great. Sharon, you want to give your contact information?
Right now?
I don't know.
Give it right now, because the blog can be forwarded to him.
Yeah, my contact information is the name of my organization, Kent Empowerment Center. That's all one word. Kent, as in the town, K-E-N-T, Empowerment, as in a word that has been very much co-opted recently, center, at gmail.com.
They can probably contact you on Mad in America, too, Sharon, because you have an article in there already.
Yeah, Mad in America is as well. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, thanks. Let's see how that happens and where that goes. Because I think that, you know, the other side is if all these people who are in these, you know, positions I don't think that they're bringing our perspective to SAMHSA or any of these folks when they're organizing. I don't think what we're talking about is ever getting to these people. And so, you know, I think that we really need to make sure that the government and those who are making these decisions and the legislature and all of the lobbyists and everybody else who's supporting it, that's why this show exists, that we are pushing to get our voices heard by the people in power in a way that they were heard in the past. And I have faith.
And, Lauren, we're sort of kind of coming to the end of your show tonight, so I just want to mention a practical concern with regard to the alternatives to alternatives or whatever we may be calling the conference. I think it's imperative that we get something online within the next, you know, maybe 48 hours even, where we can start exchanging some ideas and doing some planning and bringing in some other people who, you know, feel similarly in terms of, you know, supporting a non-governmental conference that is based on the Declaration of Principles that we discussed earlier. So I think that's a practical consideration.
It's easy to set up a Google group, or actually the simplest thing is to simply get an email address, and I prefer Gmail myself, but it could be any one of these free services. Just an email address, it can be a, you know, or of course there's always the old standby Facebook page, but yeah, I agree with Sharon. We should set something up. And I actually have a Gmail address set up for another purpose, which is never used, called network303030@gmail.com.
Okay,
people
well, I'm sorry, go ahead. People can try.
network303030@gmail.com. And if they write to that, it'll come to me, and we'll constitute ourselves an organizing committee and start working from that.
A network
3030@gmail.com.
Yeah, but let me make totally sure of that.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that we will. And Sharon, do you want to set up a Facebook page, or you want, I mean, we can deal with these technical issues off air, right? Because we're still live on.
Yeah,
air,
well, you
app,
can you
so,
can you can announce
can that.
Another program, Lauren. That would be
but
good.
I think it's really, really urgently important that people speak out and get involved. And, you know, I'm constantly reminded by folks that they're listening and they're supporting and they're just not wanting to talk on air. And so I really respect that a lot. And I also really appreciate those of you who are speaking out and doing this, and I think that we can have these kinds of organizing informational meetings online, and maybe Ted, you'll come on a special one night and do a how to get it on the ballot.
Yeah, I could do that. It is different
yeah.
in every place, though.
Yeah.
But I can give some general tips for sure, and I think it's a very good. I'm glad Yvonne was interested in it. And I think if people just hear about it, a lot of people will try to do it. They won't all succeed, but it'll turn into a movement, I hope, and that would be just fantastic.
Great. And I want to congratulate Nicole for what Iman described as a phenomenal conference, and I've seen some of your materials from this conference, and they look great, and congratulations on a great action. And Yvonne, thanks for sharing that, and I hope that you will be sharing more of what you're doing with us in the future. I'm wondering
yeah,
if you
really
have any...
organized. We need to take a page from the other disability movies, and they are very disparate. I was very surprised.
Absolutely. And Sharon, thank you so much for bringing this in tonight and for, you know, really initiating this conversation. I think it's really important and great. And also, I'd like to ask you if there's anything else you'd like to talk about. But also, Frank, I'm not sure if there's anything else you're thinking that we just have a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to know if you had any other final thoughts before we closed out.
Well, yeah, I'd like to see this idea of an alternatives to alternatives go somewhere. So I'm really excited about this. But you're talking about getting a web page together and maybe some kind of discussion going.
Fabulous. It seems like it's in order, and maybe we can talk about, like, when alternatives is and how close people are to Florida and what kind of ability people may have to get down there to protest.
Well,
this year
it's in October. It's in October in Orlando. So that's
next
when.
Next bus runs there, I believe.
Next what's it, even?
Mega bus, I believe, goes down that far too. Those are the inexpensive buses on the East Coast.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Sharon, I'm just wondering if you have any closing thoughts as we close out tonight.
You know, I would just, I guess, reiterate what I said at the beginning of the call, that I think that. You know, I was not prepared last night to hear the news about Patrick Kennedy, but I don't think we need to put a whole lot of emphasis on that. I think we need to emphasize what we are doing to move forward as a movement, and I think we need to plan that out and, you know, go ahead with whatever plan we come up with, because that's where our strength is going to be. I mean, we know we don't have money. We don't have a lot of money, but we know that we have a few people who are committed, and we have our minds, and we have our bodies, and we have our words.
And we have the internet.
And we have the internet. And there is power in those things.
Absolutely, there is, and we do have power, and collectively we can move forward. And what was it, Ted? Love and solidarity? Is that how people are finding
love? Yes, love and solidarity. I really want to start using that phrase a lot amongst the people we really feel love and solidarity for. I mean, you know, I don't have love and solidarity for Dr. Biederman, you know, but I think our comrades, the people that really believe in each other and in changing the system so people like us won't get hurt anymore. That's what we need to express to one another, love and solidarity. Yes, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I just want to remind people that we will not be on tomorrow night, Wednesday or Thursday night. We will resume our normal schedule on Friday, August 1st. And upcoming programs include Ron Leifer, specials with Tina Minkowitz, Yvonne Smith, and others around the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the Convention of Rights on Persons with Disabilities and the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination and Violence Against Women and other kinds of international law. We're going to have a whole series on human rights kinds of efforts that are taking place on an international level. And if you have an idea for a show or would like to be a guest or know of a human rights violation that you think needs attention and people to pay attention to, you can call the Talk with Kenny tip line. Area code 313, there's literally 30 seconds left. Something quick to say.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine. I was wondering, when do you see coming up?
I'm sorry?
I wonder, what do you see?
When what?
What do you see?
I can't hear you.
And what do you see coming up?
When is what coming up?
What do you see coming up?
I think the caller is asking what you see coming up next.
What do I see coming up next? I see a lot of us collectively coming together to fight and have the truth about psychiatry exposed and an end to force for psychiatry and the fraud that it's perpetuating. But I see us needing to collectively work together in order to do that. I do hope you'll call back another night. I'm sorry that I had so much trouble understanding you. And we have... No, that's great. Thanks for calling in. We'll be back on Friday, 9 to 11. If you have a tip, 718-273-8708. Thanks for speaking out, everybody. Talk to you soon.
You're welcome. Okay.
Bye.